Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Live from Belmont Park. A very good Belmont Week Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Absolutely spectacular day. And that means, I don't know, 80-ish, 78, in that range. Sunny, beautiful, and a phalanx of Christophe Clement horses lined up against the fence the way they do. If you've ever been here and you've seen them, or I think occasionally I've put up a picture of them, they all come out, about 8 or 10 of them, and they back up against the fence like little soldiers, and then they turn and off they go. It's the closest thing we've got to the to the O'Brien the gallopers when they turn up in the U.S. And you might, if you listen carefully, you might hear the French accent in the background. It is, in fact, Christophe Clement. It's a very nice filly. We're ready for Belmont Week, and we got plenty of recapping, though, to do first from the weekend. It was a wild weekend. Certainly when it comes to what went on Saturday, both here at Belmont and at Churchill, where you had, and there goes your Derby winner for his gallop. I just put up a picture of him as he looks to become the first horse since Thunder Gulch to win a Derby, either not participate or not win the Preakness, and then win the Belmont. He looks a picture. He looks great. And there's Eric Reed over to our far left, and decent contingent, John Kimmel, wandering by as well. And the one person we haven't seen this morning who's usually holding court is Claude Ray, Shug McGahey. Belmont field lost a potential starter earlier this morning. If you saw Marty McGee's missive, we're going to not have Dale Romans try to upset the apple cart with Howling Time. Howling Time bypassing Belmont. So right now, 24 hours out from the draw. The draw will be tomorrow at 11 upstairs in this lounge that they crafted for horsemen and owners, like kind of an observation deck. So there'll be a draw tomorrow at 11 that Andy will preside over, and they'll put together whatever field is gonna come together. 9 right now. It continues to hold steady after the departure of this morning of Howling Time. And if you haven't paid attention to what this field is going to look like, We the People, I put a video up of him earlier, very light gallop, and he worked on, would have been Saturday, right? Today's the 6th, so it would have been, I think, Saturday. We the People for Rudy Brissett off the Peter Pan, trying to do a classic. In fact, I should look that up. But who's the last Peter Pan Belmont winner? That was a very popular. That was a very popular avenue. At one time, We the People, Rich Strike, Barber Road, who's been preparing in Kentucky, Mo Donegal, and Nest, and they worked together the other morning. Well, maybe we'll get, I should really probably get Mike Welch for a weekend recap. He's upstairs, up in the press box. And Golden Glider for Mark Cassie, Creative Minister, Skippy Longstocking, of course, coming out, and Ethereal Road coming out of Preakness. So, it's a nice field of 9. It could certainly could use, a 10th, 11th, 12th, if anybody's. But, at the same time, in fact, we were talking earlier this morning, who's out there that is missing that would be a, you know, potential 12 furlong type. But the filly adds intrigue, you know, the same way that Secret Oath added the intrigue to Preakness. And we'll start to examine that. You know, there's no real reason to put too much time against the group, because they're going to draw tomorrow, and we'll have a much better handle, obviously, on things. In terms of the weekend and why it was so crazy, you had prices. And we're going to talk, actually, the first two guests this morning, the first hour, going to bring you both of the biggest upsets of the weekend. Friday night, for starters, Chucky Lawrence. Get lucky with Chucky, and Chucky Lawrence sending out how this horse goes off at 83-1 is bizarre and mysterious. And if you didn't see Patty Reynolds, fresh off of a win yesterday, winning with alacrity. Alacrity. Look good. You win it. You upgraded the stock. The one and only, for those of you that we miss Patty. Wow, what a summer. I put up the sheets on Saturday morning. This horse was as competitive with the second and third choices, Red Danger and Fort Washington, on Thoroughgraph, absolutely just as fast as the two horses that went off at 5-1, and somehow goes off at 83-1, and didn't just win. I mean, won, you know, convincingly. Annapolis, you know, that's the other thing. How does Annapolis coming off of last seen in October? So you're talking about a horse that's been off 8 months. 8 months. And the horse goes off at 1-2. So, I don't know. I guess just because Haughty was able to win didn't necessarily mean that, if she'd been away since Breeders' Cup, and, you know, she won in hand for Chad and Peter Bradley and partners. So now 3-4. So I guess people just assumed that Annapolis was going to be just as dominant, but that was a little bit of a presumption, to say the least. And October 3rd. October, November, December. Yeah, 8 months horse was off. And here, I'll even give you, I'll go a step further. 243 days. Okay. Pletcher off 90 days or more. Yeah, he wins at 27%. Here's a stat you wouldn't necessarily think about Todd Pletcher. How about at Penn National? This is from Thoroughgraph trainer stats. 48 starters, he's won with 16 of them. He's 16-48 going to run horses at Penn. 71% in the money. How about that? That's unbelievable. That's 34 horses? 34 horses hit the board out of 48. So Todd at Penn National. Tuck that away. This one is only a board hit, though. Anyway, wow, what a summer. A summer front gelding. And Jeremy Brooks, homebred out of a Malibu Moon mare. And the three-year-old bursts on the scene and bursts into your ADW account. Chuck Lawrence will join us. And I don't know if Chuck wants to hear these numbers, but that's his fifth graded stake on the flat. He also had one graded winner on the jump set. He won with a horse. I put that up on Saturday. He won with a horse that Sean Clancy rode, He won the Temple Gwathmi. Avanica. But otherwise, his other graded stake wins are on the flat. And he's now won at 83-1, 15-2, 16-1, 22-1, and 12-1. Every so, Chuck in graded stakes, he's going to ring the bell, to say the least. So that was the first of the biggest price upsets, and that comes on Friday evening. And actually, you had a couple of other, just to slip it in, Aaron McClellan, actually, in the Lafarge. Maldives model, a Peschenville. How great is that? Four-year-old Peschenville, Pennsylvania bred. Yeah, you had the Pennsylvania bred stakes as part of that action. And this was the first of the stakes. And terrific, obviously, terrific night for Tyler Connor, because not only does he win the feature, he also wins this on Maldives model. And he was second at 74-1 to buy land and sea in the with anticipation. Buy land and sea. In fact, I knew there was something I was forgetting. I talked to Tony Dutrow this morning for quite a while and forgot to congratulate him on that win Friday night. This for Joe Imbizzi. So that was the prequel to the two big stakes, the Oaks and Haughty, and then the Penn Mile. Annapolis was second. Uncaptured Spirit for Mark Schumann was third. And then came the two sprints, the Nimitz class win from Bruce Kravets for Tom Coulter. And actually, Arrowwood Farm bred this winner, Nimitz class, who's actually on a bit of a run. How many is he? Yeah, that's three straight. He won an open company allowance, then a restricted allowance at Penn, and now he wins a stake, the Danzig, with Ty Connor. Big, big day for Connor. Haven't talked to him in a long time when he first came around in California. And then our friend Joe Besecker with Tim Kreiser. This is a homebred of Joe's by Exaggerator, the filly Bazingacy. She wins the new start with Karamanos. So the Friday night was fun. I was keeping an eye on that action. And actually, let me slip in, even though there wasn't I shouldn't say there weren't any big prices, because there was one big price. But in Ohio, earlier in the day, you had that Best of Ohio card, including Amadevil winning as she pleased, the Dominus filly for David Wolochek and Blue Snow Racing. She's really nice, and she really, I mean, went 70s buyer. I mean, she won by half a dozen. But Uptown, 22-1, an upstart for Brian Waltz, won the Sydney Gendelman. This was the mile and a 16th for boys. 22-1 with Malcolm Franklin. Dougie Doro with Feliciano for Jerry Sparks. That was in the Pabst Palacios Memorial. And Candlelight Hours, 3-2. Jim Jackson, Elkhorn Oaks, homebred of theirs, also by Dominus, and the Shanghai Bobby gelding of Bruce Ryan's homebred that won the green carpet, 4-1. Country Club Bobby. And that was a good race. That was a good race that you had a bunch. In fact, three horses at the wire. And Ham finishing, or I take that back, Jet Radosevich finishing first and third. So nice, the two big stake cards on Friday was the prequel to then what went on subsequently. That included the 40-1 winner that we will talk to, Eric Foster, the nightcap, the Audubon at Churchill on Saturday. Unbelievable. And that was just actually part of a series of upsets. That was the biggest, obviously. And even before the stakes started, there had been a couple of prices. But absolutely thrilled for Donny Von Hemel and Bob Zollner. The Magna graduate five-year-old mare, She's All Wolf, out of the wonderful She's All In, and the 20-to-1 upset to start the stakes sequence at Churchill on Saturday. Cisco Arrieta aboard, and She's All Wolf had not won since one of the Oklahoma Classics efforts last fall. So not only is this a nice stake win, an open company stake win as well. She had coming out of the La Trienne where she ran okay. And I know people seem to want to lay Pauline's Pearls miscue at the feet of Luis Saez, who, by the way, also turned around and won his 3,000th race yesterday. Pauline's Pearl never looked like she was winning, to be honest. Even if She's All Wolf doesn't run them all down, Pauline's Pearl just sort of looked kind of listless. And, I'm sure you might write it off to being a reaction to the win in the La Trienne and a regression, but, she was 2-to-5. But I'm very pleased. Donny Von Hemel. Great for Donny to win. And then you had Admission Office. Brian Lynch for the Ammermans. It was a big day for Point of Entry. Right? Point of Entry had a couple of winners. A couple of stakes. Who was the other one? There was Admission Office. And there was... I know I saw another... Oh, we'll get, Eric Foster's. We're going to talk about Eric. We're going to talk to Eric. Keto Dan was also a Point of Entry. So two stake wins on the preview, Foster preview card. Admission Office, last to first under Johnny, and Get Smokin' actually ran very well. I'm sure Mark Cassie is disappointed, but at the same time, not unhappy in his first start back from the Alquaz Sprint. Was a good effort. Johnny aboard, as mentioned. How about Bango? Another stake win, another weekend for the Foley Barn. This for the Tamaroke Partners. Homebred Bango, who really fills in the Churchill-loving storyline. Now 7-for-13. At Churchill Downs, and of course won the Aristides last year, and then followed it up. He won that Aristides, then he came back, won the Kelly's Landing, and then went up to Ellis and won the Good Lord. It was during a 3-race win streak. So now that was second off the layoff, second start of the year for the 5-year-old, and he's a horse. He's not a gelding. So these count for something, say the least. And a 98 buyer, a career best for Bango. So 5 years old, congrats, son, out of a Smart Strike mare, Tamaroke's Jasoka, with Tyler Gaffleone aboard, 10-to-1. I mean, the bloodletting was considerable. Dynamic One, Todd Pletcher, who had a couple of significant stake wins on the weekend, because we'll talk about Emmanuel. First-time turf, winning the Pennine Ridge. Todd tried this gambit, actually, with two horses. Major General tried it as well. Didn't go as well for him. But Emmanuel was very good, the More Than Ready, winning the Pennine Ridge. Dynamic One, though, another last-to-first winner, 13-to-2, paid $14.80. And the disappointment here was Todd's other horse, American Revolution. And much like Pauline's Pearl an hour and a half earlier, the American Revolution never looked like he was winning. Right? He never looked like he was winning at any point. So then came, but you know, by now, you know, everybody's a little dazed. And you could have used Dynamic One. I did not. I was trying to get away with Scalding and American Revolution. Scalding was, you know, very meek in here. So the first two choices at 6-5 and almost 3-1, they, you know, they were really not involved. Proxy ran all right. It was second in here, beating the length. But Dynamic One came running. I tried to get Superstock involved in a price, and that didn't work. So anyway, the prices are all over the place, and there were, I thought maybe there's a chance for a pick five carryover. No such luck. And instead, you were looking at a pick five in the $400,000 range. Everything was covered. And quite a few of the horses that were covered were pool scoops. I think 7 of the 11, if I'm not mistaken. I took a screen capture of it. So anyway, that gets us to Kito Dan. We're going to talk in a little bit to Eric Foster, who I thought was really one of the other great stories of the weekend, a guy that the storyline involves, you know, having some background around the game and around horses. He was a barrel racer. He exercised rode. He and his wife, Brooke, they started to dedicate themselves full time to racing, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. They've got a farm near Owensboro. Kind of well positioned, actually. If you ever look at the calendar, at the map, the position. You know, you can basically get to Ellis Park in short order. You get down to Kentucky Downs, Louisville. You don't think of. I don't know. I don't think of that as you know, east or you know, west of Louisville as. You know, horse country per se. I'll ask him about. I'll ask Eric Foster about that. But they claimed this horse for $80,000. It's just great, and they win the $200,000 Shawnee. Normally they buy, you know, less expensive stock, and in fact have a good horse even before this claim. They had that Johnny Unleashed, because you know when I saw that Foster, you know, had won this race, and I knew the name was somewhat familiar, and I quickly looked him up, and that Johnny Unleashed that was second in the Shakertown behind Golden Pal at like 70-1 last month, or now 6 weeks ago or whatever, whenever, when did Keeneland end? It's June. It's unbelievable. Calendar just flying by. Well, so is the morning. Let me, Case, let me get you, because you haven't called Chuck in a while, let me get you situated with Chuck Lawrence, and we'll get started with Chuck later. Cherie DeVoe, Cherie with a big win, her second graded stake yesterday. She wins the Old Forster Mint Julep and the Lazy F Ranch. The late Martha Geary and one of the great names and certainly one of the great silks in the game. And Mrs. Jerry's daughter going, you know, carrying on. And so to have four goes silks out there is tremendous. And we'll catch up with Cherie. In fact, I guess it was probably maybe 3 years ago? Probably 19, right? Because it wouldn't have been pandemic. I'm going to guess 19. We had a really nice long conversation with Cherie when she was just getting going. So we can use that as a checkpoint. Also, Johnny D, top of hour 2. We'll talk to Mig later in the week. He'll be here live Thursday when racing resumes. And one of the things we got to do, Thursday and Friday cards are drawn. Then, as mentioned, they'll draw Belmont tomorrow and the rest of the grade one laden card. So far, you've got the two-year-old stakes came up very nice, the Tremont and the Astoria. You got nice size, very, they got to be pleased. It's taken a couple of years to get the, you know, sort of repurposed Astoria and Tremont position for two-year-olds. And speaking, by the way, of Naira stakes, I've got an idea that if it happens, Chuck Lawrence is partly responsible for, and I'll get to that in a minute. Chuck, congratulations on the Penn mile win.
Thank you, thank you. It was a huge effort by the whole team here to get him straightened out from last year, and it paid off.
Well, talk about that. Did he leave the scene? After being the two-year-old season, did he need some work?
Well, he was a precocious, good-looking two-year-old that worked like a stake horse in the morning, and then in the afternoon when the rider would ask him at the 3/16th pole, 8th pole, he would kind of put his head up and get all sideways, and I think he was thinking more about the girls than he was his job. So in the off season, luckily, the owner was quick to make the call to geld him, and I think it's really paid off.
There you go. So just a question of focus and maturity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I believe so. He always had the talent, but he just would never dig down when it came down to the end of the race, the tough part.
Yeah, Chuck, and I'm just noting, you used that allowance race as a comebacker, going 5.5, and in fact, you started his career going short, and this was actually one thing that wasn't brought out of this whole story, is that technically, he had never finished in front of other horses, right? I mean, he got his maiden win by DQ.
Yeah, correct. And if you go back and watch several of those turf races, he looked like he had the potential to win, but he would just always, they call the term hang or whatever, but we knew he was just messing around because he'd come back and slapping at the sparrows. He just, he was never tired. So we knew he was just playing around. So we experimented with different bits, different exercise riders, even different rider in the afternoon, and we're just so lucky that Tyler Connor, he comes by Fair Hill and jumps on him every now and then for a breeze, and he's a hungry rider, and it just all worked out.
One thing that was notable about how you and I assume he approached this race, he was much more forward in here, Chuck, and part of that might be that, he was coming out of a turf sprint, and obviously, even though in that race he basically came from off the pace, still, when you're going 5.5, there's natural speed. How much of this trip was by design and by decision?
Well, the discussions before the race with the turf being soft and as the day unfolded, We thought that we should be forwardly placed because the horses really weren't coming off the pace on this soft turf. So that was the plan, maybe not as early as we had anticipated the move, but what kind of did that on his own. When he saw daylight on the rail, he was gone. We've been kind of doing that in the morning with him, working him in behind and producing him when the hole opens up, and unfortunately the hole opened up at the top of the backside and he took off. He had plenty of horse left to keep going.
Well, and it's funny because the runner-up ran at him, and he spurted away, and you knew at that point, I said to myself, this horse is not stopping. He's winning this race. And he did. I mean, he won it. Tyler had him in hand.
Yes. It was so nice to see him actually dig deep down and be a racehorse and finish up when things got tough. And now we got high hopes. Even more so than before.
Well, I would say, from a figure standpoint, he jumped to an 88 buyer, and Twitter on Saturday morning, because, you know, people need to digest how a horse like this, in terms of digesting how this horse goes at 83-1, that I can't explain at all. I mean, there was no reason, certainly anybody, Chuck, that uses sheets, and, you know, for instance, on Thoroughgraph, I put up his Thoroughgraph page, as well as Annapolis's and the two second and third choices, Fort Washington and Red Danger. He was as competitive as Red Danger and Fort Washington that went off at 5-1. So why he got ignored like this, it is mysterious.
Yeah, well, they don't know that in stakes I've won a lot of stakes and they've all been long shots.
Well, let's talk about that, Chuck. Here we go. Here's how you get lucky with Chucky, because 168.60. But then, of course, there was Matt Shearer's Wonder Horse that got real hot, wins and pays $17, $33.40, and $21.40. And the $21.40 was a dead heat. So if he had won that photo, I think with Clement, he would have paid even more. And then also, 2560, which was your first graded stake winner on the flat, Dadeen. And typically have Rich Migliori, so we'll have to save it for Rich Thursday. But Mig rode Dadeen, paid 2560. That was in the 1996 Lawrence Realization.
Yes, for Mrs. Stephen C. Clark. What a great lady she was, yes. That was an interesting story on that horse. We went to the horse and training sale at Belmont, and Mrs. Clark, other trainer, purchased an expensive one for over $100,000. She turned to me and she said, "Chucky, all the money's gone. I have $20,000 left." So I had to research my notes, and I found this little 2-year-old that had a curb, and we purchased him, and that was the Dean, and he won at Saratoga Belmont, and of course he won the Grade 3, so it's a pretty good story.
That's a great story, and I love it. And I don't know how much you heard as you were coming on with me, but there was a lot of discussion this week about the Pennine Ridge, which has become a Grade 3 pretty quickly. And I made the suggestion when I saw this, that you had won this Lawrence Realization, which was a very historic race that goes back to the 1880s. And the race was abandoned in 2005. And I sent Glenn Kozak a note on Sunday morning, and I said, "Glenn, I said, you should really consider taking the Lawrence Realization and rechristening the Pennine Ridge, who, you know, was a nice turf horse, but not all that important in the scheme of things. And the Lawrence Realization, in its last runnings, was a 9-furlong turf race for 3-year-olds. So why not put the Lawrence Realization name on the Pennine Ridge?" So you inspired that idea. We'll see if it happens.
Well, thank you. it's nice to see that the Belmont writes these nice turf races for these young horses, and I'm kind of pointing him at either the Manila or the Caesars Belmont Derby Invitational. So
sure.
They called and said he's invited. So we'll see which race suits him best and how he's doing training. But so far, it came out like he never ran. So,
wow. Wow. Wow, what a summer is who we're talking about. Chucky Lawrence with us. And Chucky, how, you know, speaking of that Belmont Derby, and in fact the way the whole summer unfolds, how far do you think this horse wants to go?
Well, I think that's yet to be determined. In the morning, he doesn't look like a horse that wouldn't go a mile and a quarter. But his races were telling me different. I mean, he didn't really finish up in his prior races, other than the sprint that we prepped him in with this year. He actually galloped out in front, which gave us the inclination that he was a different horse this year and ready to move up. But I don't think, you know, from the horses I've been around, I don't see a mile and a quarter being a problem. It's all about the pace of a race. So where you are in the pace. So.
Well, looking forward to seeing what's ahead. And I'm just noticing, and it should have occurred to me when I saw the name, but the dam, Malibu Moonmare, by the name of Lone Guarantee, that had been, in fact, a horse that Chad had for his first start for Seth Klarman. Seth Klarman bought Lone Guarantee originally, and it was a one-time winner. And she herself out of a comic strip mare. So I was curious about this. Just kind of curious about the backstory in here. Tell us about Jeremy Brooks too.
Well, his father contacted me, I believe it was last year, and said that he wanted to beef up his racing program. He'd been down in West Virginia mainly. With his horses, and he thought that they deserved a better shot at running a little bit better tracks. Nothing against Charlestown, but thought that his horses were bred more for the 1 mile tracks. And this horse came in, and he was just right from the get go. I mean, just a good looking, gorgeous 2-year-old. And everything about him just oozed a classy horse. So Mr. Brooks was just so excited, and unfortunately he passed away earlier this year. And his son, Jeremy, I think he's even down as the breeder and all, I finally kind of developed a relationship with him, where before I was going all through his father. But Jeremy himself has just been phenomenal. He's follows my lead, and he's game to take a chance, which we did in this last race.
That's great. That's great. I'm sorry about his dad, though. That, you know, we'd get to the doorstep and get a stake horse like this and a Grade Two winner, no less. Tremendous. And yeah, I probably shouldn't just spring this on you, but since we talked about Glorious Empire, or at least I referred to him, what's going on with Matt? I've not seen many Matt Shearer entries anywhere, actually.
Well, he's been kind of restructuring his racing operation. He's cut way back from, you know, 70 horses down to I guess about 30, and he wants to cut back and then build back up. He's been in it I think 8 years now, and sees the pathway that gets you the stake horses and the bigger horses, and I think he wants to restructure it and try to take that path, and with a little bit smaller number, and we have a 2-year-old filly in Historia on Thursday that we really like. That's a homebred of his by race day. That, of course, he campaigned with Todd, he's doing fine. He's just restructuring the business a little bit.
No, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I just was. It just occurred to me when I saw Glorious Empire's name, and I thought, where is Machiera been? Because plus I haven't had a need, Chucky, to reach out to him because there hasn't been any violent weather, which is usually when we bring Matt on the show to explain, you know, the bomb cyclones and those inverted crazy weather stuff. That's Matt's our go-to guy for that.
Well, he's a huge asset to me because he can predict the weather a lot of time months ahead, and it's amazing on the Preakness how he's pretty much spot on to tell you whether it's going to be a washout or 100 degrees or different things like that. But so it does help in pointing horses to races a lot of times.
I love it. Well, Alexis's Storm is the race day filly, and I was mentioning that, in fact, the two-year-old races came up very good. Not just the stakes. There's also a two-year-old maiden special on that Thursday card. It may be, I tell you what, there's supposed to be some thunderstorms Wednesday night into Thursday, so you may end up with a wet track.
Yeah, I don't think it'll bother my filly. She's pretty straightforward. And it's a big challenge, the one hole for any 2-year-old. But if anybody can handle it, I'm hoping my filly can. She's pretty straightforward, and we'll see. I think the outside horse is definitely the horse to beat. But I think that we should fit in there just fine.
Tell us also, while I've got you, you got another entry that comes up on Friday at Del Park, and this is a Pennsylvania bred 00 Otto, which is obviously it's a great name. This is Dave Lengel, a homebred of his, and a Golden Lad out of the mare. Raiders fan, so obviously a reference to Jim Otto, the great center, and very cool. What do we know about this gelding?
Well, the owner, Dave Lengel, he's a super race fan. You'll find him at the racetrack all the time. He just enjoys being at the races and gambling, and a super person. A 3-year-old, he was a little bit of a handful to get going and get broken. He's a big precocious 3-year-old, and we've been pleased with him, and hopefully will make us all look good on Thursday or Friday? Yes, sir.
Excellent. And you know what's here's an oddity, Chuck, that is very strange. You've got Wow What a Summer, that the damn loan guarantee after Chad had her for her first start, Phil Aristone trained her, and then the damn of this horse, 00 Otto, Phil Aristone also trained that one.
How about that?
It's pretty weird. That's pretty funny. A Jersey bred named Raiders. Yeah, Raiders fan.
Yeah. Well, that's Dave, the owner. He's a huge, huge Raiders fan, and so that's where all the names come from.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, he had that horse with Phil. That's pretty wild. Well, Chucky, you know, I'm always thrilled to see you win like this, and also, you know what's funny about being at Fair Hill? Whenever a Fair Hill outfit wins, you know, it doesn't even have to be a high level, you know, a stake like this. Whenever they win, whenever Fair Hill people do well, all the other Fair Hill people congratulate. I saw everybody piling on. When I put up that tweet, Get Lucky with Chucky, and it was a parade of herring swell people and all the Fair Hill types.
Yeah, it's a unique community here at Fair Hill, and everybody kind of roots for everybody, and it's a real family atmosphere here, and we're very lucky, very, very lucky to be here.
Chucky Lawrence, everybody. Get lucky with Chucky. Chuck, we'll see you down the road this summer. Belmont, where I'm coming from today, or maybe it's Saratoga, but continued success.
Yeah, hope I'll speak to you Friday. Have a good day.
Yeah, there you go. I'll see you Friday. That's right. Good point. Good point. I love it.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. You got it. Chuck Lawrence. And you know, Chuck started out jumping horses on the jump scene and steadily, you know, developed the flat strings and he's been doing it a long time, actually. I mean, when you see that his first graded stake win came in 1996, that gives you an idea. In fact, I'm going to tell you exactly. Yeah, he had sent out some in the 80s, but then pretty much in 96 was more or less his first full year. So, you know, 26, 27 years of starting horses. Yeah, actually, I take that back. Even in those 80s, he was sending out 50, 54, 58, 86, 86, 88, 45, 47, 51, 28. Yeah, I mean, he was still riding, but he was, you know, starting to edge toward, you know, having more horses. And, yeah, Chuck's one of those guys that is just eminently capable and has, you know, a certain number of horses that he's going to handle and, you know, isn't necessarily looking to have, you know, giant string of horses. But he's had extended period of success. You know, winning at, you know, standard, a kind of standard, you know, 12-15%. He wins. So, Chuck Lawrence. We're going to talk to Eric Foster next, and I was going to try to snare the other Eric, Eric Reed, who was on. He was on the other side of the path, and he walked off with. He walked off with Rich Strike, so we'll get him this week, though. Well, Case, let me do this. I'll text him. Casey's trying to reach. Okay, very good. Casey was having a little hiccup getting to Eric Foster while we transition over to the Churchill activities. Let me mention the horse from Friday, and we're certainly going to talk to Eric Foster about his barrel racing and some of his rodeo style activities. Speaking of you know, bull riders and such, Michael Tomlinson. He's got a few belt buckles at home. Tomlinson sent out a stunning 3-year-old winner, that Jimmy Creed, on Friday. Did you see Conaher? This was in the race with Gunite, and he actually, it wasn't like Conaher was kept a secret, because he ended up going off favored. He was 3-1 morning line, Gunite was 2-1, and Surfer Dude was 5-2. But then when the bidding started, Conaher got bet down 160, so just over 3-2. Paid 520, won by 5, could have won by as much as he wanted. This is Patricia's Hope and Mark Farrar, a 104 buyer. And I sent a note to Mike, and they've got to be very excited. And you know, to be honest, this horse gave every indication of moving forward off of that turf start to begin the year. He had been away since July of last year when he broke his maiden, and then he came back at Gulfstream in a turf sprint, ran kind of, you know, evenly, didn't really do much, but then came back on the dirt and jumped forward in a non-winners of two allowance at Keeneland with a 97 buyer, and now a 104, and obviously this is a stakes sprinter for Tomlinson, and and clients. Well, Eric Foster's joining us, which was one of the other great big price stories from the weekend. And basically, Eric and his team, his partners, and his wife Brooklyn, and whoever else is involved, they basically outmakered Maker, an $80,000 claim. This is pulled right from Mike Maker's book, and turn right around and win the stake to close out the card at Churchill on Saturday late afternoon. Eric Foster, congratulations.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, we really enjoyed ourselves there. You know, it wasn't a grudge thing or anything. We were just racing horses, and it was a good day.
You know, it's not as if, because I'm sure, you know, I saw some of the chatter on Twitter, and I knew when I saw the name, I said, I said to myself, this guy's won something recently, or you know, he's got a nice horse. And sure enough, when I looked it up, there was that Johnny Unleashed that at Keeneland you ran huge behind Golden Pal. And your MO has been, you know, to buy kind of cheaper horses. Talk about, you know, how you reached in and decided to spend $80,000 to claim Kittadan.
You know, one of my owners, Bill Wargo, if I try to tell him a horse that I like, it's like he usually finds one better in the same race that he likes that we'll partner on. And this time here, I called him. I said, "Hey, Bill, I found the horse," and I gave him the race. I said, "Found a horse in this race, if there's anything in there you like." And he texted me back in about an hour. He said, "I like that Kittadan." And I said, "Well, we're on the same page." So that's kind of how it went down. And then our other partner, Doug Miller, whenever he was pretty easy to get on board with that horse. He's just a nice horse. You know, he had run 11 times and already had 5 wins and won the rush away. And, you know, I don't know that we thought we were going to have a steady course, but when you claim the horses in Kentucky, you got to up them 20% anyway. So that was really the only spot coming up, and we thought we had a shot when the nominations came out. Tiz the Bomb was in there, and I knew if he went in, it was going to be pretty salty. But he come entry day, he didn't go in, and it still wasn't an easy race. The horse ran a heck of a race and got hooked up coming down the stretch and really had to battle to win that. It wasn't like it just set up for him, because he still, with the setup, he still had to come in there and really got in a horse race down the stretch. So it was pretty cool.
Were you surprised? Because I'm going to bring up the figs and the indication about his, you know, how live he was in this spot. But were you surprised that this horse was available even for 80?
Kind of. Yeah. You know, it makes you want to get them home and get them in your hands and have them for a couple weeks. You know, you think there might be some reason they were, you know, willing to give him away for 80. And, you know, then, but the, when I was selling him to myself, I was thinking, you know, they already made money. They claimed him for 35. That's part of the story.
That's right.
A lot of people are missing. Claimed the horse for 35. They won an allowance at Gulfstream and then come to Turfway and win the rush away. You know, they were out on the horse. And I see a lot of those guys, I mean, they can do that. They have a lot of horses. They don't have to it's not so much as an individual horse. They got another horse. They probably got a horse in their barn they think can outrun him, and maybe can. So, you know, to me, a horse like that, I might give him 3 or 4 tries at a higher level to where they can just go for the win, you know.
Yeah.
So that was my selling point to myself on.
It certainly all came together, and part of this equation too, Gerardo Corrales, for people that have already latched onto him in the last couple of years, whether it's at Turfway or, you know, wherever they've noticed Corrales, he can really ride, and he's an asset.
I'm
I feel like we have a pretty good relationship. I mean, I love the guy. He doesn't come out beat. He's always optimistic. We know we're not going to win them all, but we go into every one knowing we got a shot. I trust him. I just trust him to give me that, ride like it's our last chance every time. And I think he fits my riding the way I gallop my own and my assistant gallops. And I think you got to find a rider that kind of fits with your program. And a lot of our horses gallop in the bit, and he keeps his riding style just really fits the way we train. So that's another thing that helps us as a team.
Let's delve into that and your background. And I know you're out by Owensboro, right?
Right.
A little south of Owensboro.
Yeah.
Your story, from what I've read and deciphered, you were involved around racing. You did some exercise riding. You did some barrel racing, but then you went in a different direction, and you and your wife Brooke kind of committed to this. What, 7, 8, 9 years ago?
I'm thinking this is our 7th year. Yep.
There you go.
It finally got set up where we had a good income and starting to settle in, and just couldn't get the horses off our minds. So that's how it got going. I just my son says I'm sick. I just can't quit thinking about him.
What about Brooke? I mean, she doesn't have an equine background.
She started this. She started out doing this, but just for loving me, she just wanted to help me to. She could see it and feel it, and she originally she always liked horses, but she wasn't a competitive type of horse person. But now that we're doing it, she is she's loving it now. So that's all we talk. We could go somewhere and try to get a. Not necessarily try to get away from horses, but do something that doesn't have anything to do with horses always turns into that conversation.
what kind of a farm? Was it a farm, or is it more of a kind of a ranch setup? Talk about your operation and what you set out to do with it.
We have 16 acres. And we originally, we had a couple horses, and we were doing cattle, and we were taking a lot of pride in our cattle. We were selling beef to people we worked with. We had a big client list on that. We loved the cattle, and we went to the. I had trained horses when I was younger, and. So I was always, we were always going to the races and watching the races. Our TV was always on the races, but we thought, well, we'll buy a mare just to have a baby, and then we'll sell the baby, because we just like doing it, and we had no intention of quitting our public work. But we bought a mare at the Fazek Tipton, and got the baby up to a yearling, and she was beautiful, and. We got to talking about selling her, and was like, well, it's not cheap to sell them. And I said, well, we could take that money that we're going to invest in selling her and break her and try her. And that's how it got going. We originally intended on selling our first one, and we kept her and ran.
Unbelievable. It's tremendous. Just tremendous. And you mentioned your son. How many kids?
I've got a 23 year old son and a 16 year old daughter, and I would say he might have got burned out on it a little bit. He's doing his own thing. He's got he started his own business and is doing very well. And my daughter is still helping us, and everybody's still. Interested. He hasn't been to the barn for a while. Now she comes every day, so it you know, for a long time, we didn't have any help. It was just the family. So that's why it was a foster family racing to start with.
I love it.
You know.
That's great.
So.
Where'd you grow up?
Owensboro.
Right in Owensboro.
Owensboro. Yep.
And, you know, it's funny because I mentioned. Well, exactly, and I mentioned this, Eric, that when I told people we were going to talk to you today, and knowing where Owensboro is, I mean, you're actually that. I don't think of that as horse country in Kentucky, but you're not far from Ellis. You're an easy drive down to Kentucky Downs, and you're an easy drive to Louisville. I mean, by all rights, it's really kind of a well positioned place.
It is. I mean, going to Churchill or Keeneland, I might have to go through two or three stoplights. You know, that's how convenient it is just to get right on the road. And it's like 2 hours and 15 minutes to Keeneland. It's right exactly 2 hours to Churchill. And then, of course, Ellis. We do stable at Ellis. It's convenient for us because of the watering and the taking care of the track is a little more involved in the summertime, and they take care of that for you. And we were going to Keeneland for the spring meet on most years to take the babies and get them going. And then we always ship to Churchill and Turfway. And, you know, I don't know if there's an advantage or a disadvantage to shipping. You know, I think when the heat is on in the summertime, it's ideal that we're already over there at Ellis, you know, to keep from shipping in that 100-degree weather. But sure. On the other tracks, I just really think the horses relax here on our farm. I think it's a really good atmosphere. And, you know, I don't know. I think the trailer ride just takes the edge off of them just enough that they're good on race day. And I just look for the benefits, you know, because it's a benefit to us to be able to stay home, too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got a lot going for you, and you obviously you're having your best year. Talk about Johnny Unleashed, too, and when we're going to see him next.
Saturday in Mighty Bow.
Oh, tremendous. All right, so he's going to come back in the overnight.
I tell you what, if you go back and look at him, that dude, he always has to run against the best in the world. I mean, everywhere he goes, you can never go into his race thinking you're going to catch a light group, you know. And he doesn't have the allowance conditions anymore. And you know, not saying we wouldn't ever run him for a club, but we like him enough to try him in these races. And he's got close a few times. I don't know, maybe if he gets the right trip and just a little luck, maybe he can do it.
Well, you're not going to run into Golden Lad because he's going to be at Ascot, so you're free and clear of him on Saturday. And I suppose that Michelle Lovell might have something to say. She might have her big horse, but he's really, you know, been on a nice roll. He's made $250,000, and you paid $10,000 for him.
He's been a lot of fun. I tell you, when he ran Oaks Day and just walking over, the people in the crowd were talking to him like he was a human, and a lot of people do, you know, Johnny, and he's got a pretty good following, you know. I think a lot of people are pulling for me and my wife and our team. I think a lot of people are pulling for us, and so he's kind of been our staple. And but then there's some other, like you said, you recognize the name too when you looked him up. And so he's been a lot of fun for us.
Now, and well, you also had that. You also, looking on the earnings list, you had Cool Rags too, right?
Yes, Cool Rags, and he was in a couple weeks ago, and it came off the turf, and I think there's something for him coming up at Churchill.
He's okay. Yeah. He's okay.
He's okay. Yep.
That was so great.
The same guys on the Cool Rags are the guys that are on that own Kittadan.
Well, let's give everybody maybe a winner or maybe two coming up later this week on Wednesday. You're sending out the Boss Factor, and off we go in the second and the eighth, and then on Thursday, my Money and Mrs. Nushy, and Corrales is on board all four.
Yeah, and I think all four have a good shot. You know. So we'll see. Let's have a good week and wind up that topping off Saturday would be good with me.
Eric, you're going to have to. One thing I don't think you've got yet is any social media presence. Is there a Foster Family Racing Twitter or anything where people can follow you?
Steve, they can look my wife up. She does a lot of that Brooklyn Foster. I don't get on it. I don't have time. You know, I'm. She'll show me some stuff. She does some TikTok and different things. They could probably, I don't know how you go about finding somebody, but I'm sure they can look for Brooklyn Foster, and she is my social media. You know, other than that, you got to give me a ring on the phone.
Well, that I will. I'm happy to do that, and it's great to get you on here. I was just. This is my favorite kind of story, Eric, and you know that you'd redirect you know, the family would redirect their interest to the game, and you know you put a lot on the line, and obviously, you know it's all invested in the farm and in the horses, and to be rewarded like this, it's just great to see. So well done, continued success.
Well, I appreciate it. It's let me say that it's a lot of fun. The horses are a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. It takes a lot of people. You know, you're counting on so many different people to do this. And just a blessing for me to have all the good people that I got to help me. And then when you get all that going, you got to have the horse. Yeah. You got to have the good horses, and then they start making you look good. So. We appreciate having a couple horses that can run.
Did any who have you heard from? Who made a bet or two on the? How many people bet?
Well, one of they all did a little bit, and one of my owners, I think the biggest one I know, he had Doug Miller had 200 across, so that was a pretty good payoff.
That's a good pop. That's all right.
And they wheeled him in the trifecta and a couple different exotics. So they had a good time. And then I'll tell you what, when I go to the races, I don't get to enjoy it like the owners do. But I'll tell you what, Churchill really puts it on for those owners. And they had a ball. Whether we won or not, they had a ball that day. And they were so happy, they couldn't quit bragging on those guys for taking care of them.
Well, now you got the race in July, right? I mean, you're going to just swing around and point for that.
You hope so. You know, there's so many different things that factor into the horses, but you do have to have a target like that. That would definitely be a target, yes.
Tremendous. Well. Kitto Dan, $80,000 claim, point of entry, and the Fosters, Eric and Brooklyn, and the partners as well, of course, Doug Miller and Bill Wargle, with one of the great stories out of the weekend. Eric, great job and continued success. I hope to talk again soon.
I'll tell you what, appreciate it, Steve. Thank you now.
You got it. Eric Foster, everybody. And 80-1, Chucky Lawrence, and 40-1, Eric Foster. And now Johnny's going to be next, Johnny D, after the break. Johnny will explain how you pick out horses that are 80-1 and 40-1. I tried. I tried after. I know it's after the fact, but I tell you, the key to Dan, I really felt like was a missed opportunity. And, in fact, yesterday morning there's a discussion on Twitter that John Hardoon from the Ragazin and Darren Sipes, we're all kind of bandying about sheet philosophy. And, you know, I mean, these horses, I mean, Kitto Dan was the fastest horse on the sheets coming in. Nobody in that field had run faster on Thorograph, a 5, than Kito Dan had run in the rush away. Now, he hadn't run as fast on turf, but he was right in line, and the 5 had been a new top, 2 back. So, I mean, this was a mammoth opportunity. And Chucky was a little different, I thought. And part of his success of, wow, what a summer, to me, was that they were aggressive. And Chuck brings up a great point. I mean, that course was listed as soft. And it's very difficult for horses to quicken, you know, off the pace types. It's very tough for them to quicken on soft turf. So that entered into it, and that was smart. And what a day for Ty Connor. Wow. Should really get a hold of him. We had him on when he was a bug. We had Ty Connor. That was a mammoth day for him. 3 stake wins and a couple of placements. So that was a fun hour. Let's take a break. We're getting late already. Johnny D next. Cherie DeVoe to follow. Stay with us. We're live at Belmont Park, and now I'm here all alone.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.